Good evening. Guess we're on. Well, as we continue in our study, I think, Kevin, this is probably yours. Looks like one of your pencils. As we continue on our study of church leadership on elders, the last topic I had was not given to wine or not given to much wine of elders in one spot and much wine for deacons in the next. We're going to move on, and the topic for tonight that I've got written down, church leadership should be men who are hospitable and lovers of what is good. Be a lover of what is good. I'm going to focus 90% of the talk tonight will come about this first item of being hospitable. I think that a lover of what is good is a fairly explanatory, and it's actually been included in a lot of our other classes. As we look at the phrase lover of what is good, I think we have an understanding of what is good, but the term a lover is something that we could probably talk about briefly before we move into hospitality. What are the two commandments that we have from Christ in the New Testament? What's the most important?
Love God.
Love your neighbor. So do we find it shocking or surprising that a commandment or a qualification for an elder is that that man is a loving person? If you're to love God and you're to love your neighbor, those are the top two priorities. That embodies your whole life. It's a characteristic of who you are. Any thoughts more on just the demeanor, the nature, the characteristic of a man being a lovable man or someone who is loving?
Well, it's pretty important because it flows then through all the other characteristics and kind of controls them.
Not quick-tempered. If you got a loving person, are they going to be a quick-tempered person that's a brawler, those other things? This is, I think, probably one of the keystone or one of the most important characteristic traits of an elder. They are a kind, loving person that looks for the best in people and tries to bring out those good qualities and characteristics of the flock. And yet, as some others have talked about, is stern enough to make discipline out of love as well, not out of hatred or anger. How are what husbands, if they're going to be elders, how are they to treat their wives? In the same fashion or differently?
Love them as
their own selves. Okay. So do you think it would stand to say that if a husband wasn't loving towards his wife, that probably not going to be too loving towards the church? Is that a all or nothing statement, or could it go both ways? What do you think?
But that would have a bearing. There should be that characteristic.
I mean, they are different examples, but I think that they go hand in hand. If we see a man who is mean or abusive to his wife, then in general, I would think that we could say he's just not a very loving person, and that characteristic would probably flow eventually into the congregation as well, that there would be people in that congregation that would probably treat in the same fashion. Ben, what are you thinking?
I'm just thinking. So, if his wife is not good, and he's a lover of what is good,
yeah.
Can he be a lover? Can he love his wife if his wife is not good? I took a tangent.
Yeah.
Had me thinking. It's not always hypothetical.
Then I would think that love would probably transcend to other characteristics of, I don't know, we're told to love our enemies as well. You know, elders are going to have to make decisions from time to time in the congregation and in their community that may not be decisions that everybody agrees with. And there may be people that oppose them and beset them. And when those circumstances come up, how are elders to treat the people that oppose them? Sternly, but with love. Hopefully to return them back to the fold.
Actually, this word that you use in Titus is where that's at, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in Titus.
It's an adjective which means loving goodness. It's got fellow in there, but it's in, it's got extra tied onto the end of it. So, lover of good, that's the way it's translated in some Bibles.
Yeah. And that's what we're going to kind of go into next. I think that there's a little bit of a tie-in between this, a lover of what is good, and hospitality. And I'd like to spend the majority of our time go ahead and talk about that. Turn with me to Romans 12, 9 through 13. If somebody would read that, Romans 12, 9 through 13.
Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil, cling to what is good. Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love and honor, giving preference to one another. Not lagging in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing steadfast in prayer.
And 13.
Distributing to the needs of the saints, given to hospitality.
All right. So the question I'll ask you tonight is, are you given to hospitality? If so, how do you know? How do you know that you're a hospitable person? Well, first, let's define what is hospitality. And this is kind of where Duane was going with some of his comments. English Dictionary is going to define hospitality as friendly reception and treatment of guests or strangers. In the view of this definition, we often think and speak about hospitality as having our friends over. Are you a hospitable person? Do you have other people from church come over? Do you invite people into your home? But I don't think that that's necessarily the context or the framing that the Bible always uses. When the Bible talks about hospitality, it's generally talking about bringing who into our homes? Our best friends?
Strangers.
That's the true test of hospitality. The original word that's translated hospitality here in Romans and as well in Titus, as Duane was talking about, is this word here. Philonexia, which is out of two words, and I know that you're familiar with this word, which is love, philo. This one may be a new one for you, though. That word comes from stranger, or stranger comes from that word. So literally, what it's talking about here in Romans 12 is that we are to love strangers, not necessarily just our brothers and sisters in Christ and our family members, although that is commanded as well, but it's the strangers. The love of strangers. It's a cordial treatment and provision for those who are outside of our family. So the test is, do you treat those who are not in your family as though they are? That's opening the blessings of our home to those who would not naturally be entitled to them. This concept, I think, probably goes beyond our physical family as well. The first part of verse 13 here, distributing to the needs of saints, focuses on how we treat other Christians. The last half tells us how we are to treat those who are not. So we've got a little bit of a combo passage here.
Why would you invite them to your house, I guess is what it's asking.
Why would you invite them to your house? We're going to get to that here in just a minute. You're beating me to the punch a little bit. True hospitality, and I think that this kind of goes a little bit with what Gwen was saying, true hospitality is not entertaining. And that's one of the points that I kind of wanted to stress tonight. True hospitality is not entertaining. When you entertain, you bring glory to yourself. When you're hospitable, you bring glory to God. And I know that we've got that passage that we, you know, unwittingly entertain strangers, things like that. But I'm talking about the come over and let me show you the neat things in my house, or let's play games or something like that. Let's have a good time, entertain like that. That is bringing not necessarily glory to the Lord. Whenever we are talking about this hospitality, that is bringing glory to God. Some Christians lose that focus from time to time. They love to show off the things that they have, or their homes, or their newest recipes, or well-kept secrets. They may even love the companionship of good friends to come over and watch something on TV. They do it because it makes them feel good. And it has its own reward, but we're talking about hospitality tonight. True hospitality may be a risky and expensive endeavor. Let's turn to Luke chapter 10, 34 and 35. If somebody would read that.
So he went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine, and he set him on his own animal and brought him to the inn and took care of him. And on the next day when he departed, he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said to him, take care of him. Whatever more you spend, when I come again, I will repay you.
Okay, so what are we to take from... We're all familiar with the story of the Good Samaritan here. What are we to take from this story as far as church leadership goes? How are elders to respond to these individuals?
Generously.
Okay.
I had an example tonight. I was coming from Nixa on CC, busy about 5 to 5:30. Cars everywhere. This guy was pushing his car by himself, which isn't real successful usually. The guy way ahead of him had pulled over to the side and was running back to help him. Nobody else stopped. Well, I didn't, because I couldn't push his vehicle anyway.
Well, you already had your good deed last week. Or maybe it was the week before, I guess. You know, when it comes to this hospitality issue, is that I think all of us need to be prepared for these events. They're going to happen, and we're going to sometimes stumble across opportunities to be hospitable. But I think as good Christians, we need to be looking for these opportunities. I would say that this man, he may not have walked right by, I don't know, but I think as Christians, one of the things I want to take away from this is we need to be looking for opportunities to be hospitable, not them just falling in our lap. If we just sit around waiting for some stranger to knock on our door, it's probably not going to happen. Dwayne?
So what you're saying is that hospitality doesn't necessarily relate to our home. I mean, it does, but here, this guy was outside of his home. He was out on the highway.
Yeah.
And so he was being very hospitable. So you don't have to be... You don't have to bring them in your home.
No, I think Dad, I think, took some guy over to the motel here in 65 and 14. I mean, there's lots of places around that you could put somebody up in a room for a night for $49.95, and they get a great benefit out of that if they come by. Karen?
Yeah, kind of to Glenn's point, a little bit of her story, you know, we all have different guests. We can't all push the car on the road. So I guess when the opportunity comes up that we can serve, we should be ready to go.
Yeah.
At the same time, knowing our limits, we've had a long discussion about if it's safe for me to pick a guy up and take him to the hotel. Obviously not, but we all have something we can do, and we should be ready to do it.
We should be aware of our talents. We should also not seek reciprocity whenever we do our good deeds. It's a moral duty that has its reward and is pleasing to God. But somebody read Luke 14, 12 through 14. Luke 14, 12 through 14. Whenever we do these good hospitable deeds, what are we doing it for? What's the motivation? Okay.
And he said also to him who invited him, when you give a dinner or a supper, not ask your friends or brothers or relatives nor rich neighbors, lest they also invite you back and you be repaid. When you give a feast, invite the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed, because they cannot repay you, for you shall be repaid for the resurrection of the just.
So you shouldn't ask me for bread and food, Jesus.
You know, I struggle with this passage sometimes and think, what kind of implications does this have in 2012 and in 2013? Should we take this more literally, and should we have more efforts, even on an individual basis, to reach out to our coworkers or people that really need the Lord? How are we doing with this passage?
Part of the idea here is,
you know, the thing about hospitality is it's so easy for us to relate it to our home, but it isn't inherently about our home. And this is a good example of that. You know, here's an example of someone doing a good deed, in this case, feeding people. And the hospitality is that you're doing it to do it. You're not doing it for your benefit. You know, because that's what we're told not to do. Don't ask the people who can help you out, because you know that's what the Pharisees did. You know, that's what we see a lot of political leaders do today, and people of influence. And, you know, the whole "I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine." Look, what's the hospitality there? There isn't any. Do your deeds to somebody who can't repay you, and then that's hospitality.
And if you do something to help someone who doesn't know you, shouldn't we say something about why we're doing it? Not just that, you know, people on the street help one another, like Wayne was talking about today. But if you help somebody that doesn't know you're a Christian, and you tell them, you know, this is in the name of, I do this because I'm a Christian, or I do this in the name of Christ. We're told whatever we do, word or deed, we're to do all in the name of the Lord. And so, if we do something good and don't take the opportunity to tell this person why we did this, because most people are going to wonder why. Or they're going to think, well, that's just a really good person that they stopped and helped me. Well, is it because we're such a good person, or is it because we're doing it for the Lord?
It's a good provides a good opportunity to give credit where it's really due.
I have not taken advantage of that in the past. You know, when I've done something to help somebody, I just did it. You know, didn't say, you know, I'm doing this because I'm a Christian. You know, I didn't say anything about that, and I just think I did it.
We've got a really good example of several individuals in the Old Testament. The first one that I can think of is Job. If somebody would read Job 31:32, we're going to spend a little bit of time here talking about the duty of God's people as relates to hospitality.
No sojourner had to lodge in the street, for I opened my doors to the traveler.
Okay, read that again for me, Dwayne.
But no sojourner had to lodge in the street, for I have opened my doors to the traveler.
I think what Job was describing here was that God appointed duty of hospitality. He's always expected as a people to be hospitable. The next person I can think of is Abraham. Somebody read Genesis 18:2-8. Genesis 18:2-8.
So he lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, three men were standing by him. And when he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the ground and said, "Look, my Lord, if I have now found favor in your sight, do not pass on by your servant. Please let a little water be brought, and wash your feet, and rest yourself under the tree, and I will bring a morsel of bread that you may refresh your heart. After that you may pass by, inasmuch as you have come to your servant." They said, "Do as you have said."
So Abraham hurried and made the tent, and hurried into the tent to Sarah and said, quickly, make ready 3 measures of fine meal, knead it, and make cakes. And Abraham ran to the herd, took a tender and good calf, gave it to the young man, and hastened to prepare it. So he took butter and milk and the calf which he had prepared and set it before them, and he stood by them under the tree as they ate.
Okay. It was common for Bedouin sojourners to extend hospitality, but I'm convinced that both Sarah and Abraham, and it says it several times in this passage, acted with urgency to meet the immediate needs of these strangers because they wanted to reflect the graciousness of their God to others. And this goes back a little bit to what Dad said. They wanted to show these other people that God was gracious and they were going to be His servants and be His hands.
How do we relate that to today?
As far as...
I don't have any veterans.
Don't have any?
I don't have anybody that needs to stay the night because they're trapped.
Yeah.
We don't have that circumstance most of the time.
Yeah. A lot of the physical, I would say, comparatively speaking, a lot of the physical needs that were... present back then, a lot of those are fulfilled today. There's just not a lot of those people in the dire, desperate needs. They're out there in some of the other cities, but in our rural area, it doesn't quite exist as much. I would say that probably one of the best ways that we can be hospitable is going to be towards spiritual needs of people as well. Identifying those people that have a spiritual, spiritually homeless, I guess you could say, and need that help. There will be the physical out there, but I think there's a lot more spiritual homelessness than physical homelessness right now.
Well, I think if you just boil this down to what is the basic issue here? The basic issue is there were people who Abraham came in contact with who had a need. They needed food. You know, Abraham didn't. He didn't know if they had enough food. He didn't ask. He was offered. They needed food, and he also offered them a place of shade and a place to stay. And, you know, yeah, we don't have people roaming around, but we have people who have needs, and we can recognize those needs and take care of those needs. And, yeah, maybe we don't own cows that we can go slaughter, or, you know, we're not going to do the things that Abraham and Sarah did, but we can still see that, okay, well, these people who I know, or I've come in contact with, they have a need, and I'm going to take care of that need.
One of the things I like about this story is kind of the, what happened in the end. Did Abraham have any idea that whenever he went to be hospitable, did he have any idea that the word of God from these people was going to come to him? And look at the impact that it's had on our lives because of the promise that came to Abraham through some of these events. There's a lot of things that will come out of hospitality that we never anticipate.
Two things too, it's an attitude. We're talking about attitude.
Yeah. It probably ties into the person that's a loving person.
Instead of going out and killing one of our calves, so maybe we go to the grocery store and buy a turkey or something, you know, provide it for them.
I bought a gift certificate to Rosie Joe's for one of my employees because she's just a really good hard worker, and they don't have hardly any money, and heard that was her favorite place to eat, and so it's Rosie Joe's for them. They're out there. We just have to be looking for them. Hospitality in the Law of Moses. Somebody read Leviticus 19:33-34. Leviticus 19:33-34.
And if a stranger dwells with you in your land, you shall not mistreat him. The stranger who dwells among you shall be to you as one born among you, and you shall love him as yourself, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt, I am the Lord your God.
I think this is probably one of the clearest, just black and white texts in the Old Testament where we see the necessity for hospitality. The question I want to ask you here is, what was the motivation for being hospitable?
Love.
But it's recalling something. He's saying, I want you to be hospitable because what? Because why?
You were in need at one
time. Aha. You were in the same spot. There's that word for. For you were once strangers in the land of Egypt. And then he says at the end of that statement, what? How does he cap that off there at the end? I am the Lord your God. So any Jew at that day who was with it and knew anything about the law, when they heard the term, I am the Lord your God, what was probably the first thing they thought of? Delivery, coming out of Egypt, the Ten Commandments. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. He says over and over in Exodus 20 in the Old Testament. So I think whenever in this law of Moses and Leviticus, it says, you need to take care of these people that are strangers in your land, for I am the Lord your God. He's saying, because I took care of you in a foreign land, you take care of them while they're in a foreign land. Yeah.
Goes with this too. If the Lord reminds me that I am the Lord your God, in a sense he's reminding me of what we're talking about tonight, and therefore you should be a lover of what is good. We're being reminded in a sense to be a lover of what's good, and that that includes loving God as well as loving those around us in our actions too.
Thank you, Kevin. There's one that kind of ties in with this. Kevin, would you mind to read this? Ephesians chapter 2. Verse 19. Chapter 2, verse 12 is talking about without Christ that we were aliens and strangers and without hope. And then you can read verse 19.
2:19. Now therefore you are no longer strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints.
Okay, so there's the ultimate example of hospitality. We were in a sinful state. We were strangers. We were foreigners. But we've been brought into the hospitality and to the household of God. It's a good passage. It ties in with Exodus and the children of Egypt there. So let's look at some hospitality in the New Testament. Somebody read Romans 12:13.
God's people who are in need, practice hospitality.
Okay, practice hospitality. Let's look at all the different ways that it talks about here. What's another version that somebody has?
Distributing to the needs of the saints.
Distributing to the needs of the saints. What else?
Given to hospitality
is what the New King James says. I think the literal translation that Karen brought up is closer to that pursue hospitality. Given or pursue it. That verb pursue implies a continuous action. Would be used similar in an analogy. If Bob were here, he'd probably say it's like stalking your prey. You know, you're going to pursue that thing. You're not just going to sit and wait for it to come to you. You're going to go after those opportunities and go after them. Pursue. Be given to hospitality. Don't sit idly by and hope that it falls into your lap. That's the same one as that 1 Timothy 3:2, talking about the leadership of the church, that they are given to hospitality, that they pursue it. Hebrews chapter 13:2, somebody read that.
Just two?
Yeah, just verse 2.
Be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unaware.
All right, that was the one that we brought up earlier. That's an activity that's easy to neglect or only do sporadically. We should constantly be ready for these opportunities in our lives. 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 8-9. be one of our last ones here in the New Testament. Somebody would read 1 Peter 4, 8-9.
Be hospitable one another without grumbling. Well, actually, above all things, have fervent love for one another, for love will cover much true sins. And be hospitable to one another and don't grumble about it.
Don't grumble about it. I think that last part there, don't grumble about it, adds a whole other dimension to the command. It's just not a legalistic responsibility that we need to fill, that we have to have a quota of guests that we are nice to. The truly hospitable person is able to see through the physical work and trouble and focus on the spiritual benefit that will be gained. And as the next verse indicates, the hospitable Christian views himself as a steward of everything that God has given to him and seeks to use it to bring glory to that to God. That's that opportunity to say, well, thank you for being kind to me. Well, not a problem. It's what God would want me to do. It's a comeback like that that gives credit where credit is due. I'm happy to do it. It's a blessing from the Lord. Number three here, what does hospitality look like?
H-O-S-P-I-T-A-T.
I'm getting lost in my I's and my T's. Too many dotting and crossing. Yeah, you get the point. I spelled it right at the top. What does hospitality look like? I think that there's an excellent example of authentic hospitality that really stands out to me in the Old Testament. Has anybody ever heard of a Shunammite chamber? Anybody heard of a Shunammite chamber? Let's go to 2 Kings chapter 4. Somebody read verses 8 through 10. 2 Kings 4, 8 through 10.
Now it happened one day that Elisha went to Shunem, where there was a notable woman, and she persuaded him to eat some food. So it was, as often as he passed by, he would turn in there to eat some food. And she said to her husband, "Look now, I know that this is a holy man of God who passes by us regularly. Please let us make a small upper room on the wall, and let us put a bed for him there, and a table and a chair and a lampstand, so it will be, whenever he comes to us, he can turn in here."
All right. Ladies that are married here, how do you think that your husband would react if you told him, you know, Tom Woody's coming down next week and I think he's going to be here for a 2-week study. How about we make a little addition onto the back of the house and have him stay with us? Maybe we'll build him a little lampstand as well. We'll go out and buy all these things and make an addition to the house and really give him a place that every time he's down at the Ozarks, he knows he's got a spot for us, and that'll be his dedicated spot. And maybe when John Lee or when Rick comes down, that'll be a devoted spot for an evangelist or some weary sojourner, somebody that we find to stay. How do you think your husband would respond to that? That's kind of a radical change to our lives to do something like that. But this is exactly what happened here to Elisha. He was so motivated, Elisha was, by their kindness, that he wanted to help him out. Somebody read how he helped him out. I'll read that, verses 13 through 17. And he said to him, "Say now to her, 'Look, you have been concerned for us with all this care. What can I do for you? Do you want me to speak on your behalf to the king or to the commander of the army?' She answered, 'I dwell among my own people.' So he said to her, 'What then is to be done for her?' And Gehazi answered, 'Actually, she has no son, and her husband is old.' So he said, 'Call her.' When he had called her, he stood in the doorway. Then he said, 'About this time next year, you shall embrace a son.' And she said, 'Oh no, my lord, man of God, don't lie to your maidservant.
But the woman conceived and bore a son when the appointed time had come, of which Elisha had told her. Have you ever thought that whenever you do something good and go out of your way to be hospitable, that you're going to get a blessing like this? What a fantastic example of something that could happen. And the story even goes on after that. The boy grew, and he grew. And what happened to him? And he dies. It's kind of like, well, thanks a lot here. You give me a child, and then he dies. And so what did Elisha do? He comes back to the house, and he brings the child back to life. That's such a neat story there. A Shunammite chamber. How far are you willing to go to inconvenience yourself to convenience someone else? Strategic hospitality is where we're going to end tonight. Yeah, you get it. Strategic hospitality. As we mentioned earlier, the ultimate act of hospitality was when Jesus Christ Himself died for sinners to make all those who obey the gospel and subject themselves to the love in simple faith, plunging themselves in the waters of baptism for the remission of their sins, and to be added to the household of God. That is the ultimate strategic hospitality shown there, that we are no longer strangers and sojourners. Everybody that trusts in Jesus finds a home with Him. Why did God do this? What was the purpose of this hospitality through Christ? Somebody read Ephesians chapter 1, 5 through 6. Why did God show this hospitality towards us?
Having predestined us to adoption as sons by Jesus Christ to Himself, according to the good pleasure of His will, to the praise of the glory of His grace, by which He made us accepted in the beloved.
All right. He did it for the praise and the glory of His own grace. To demonstrate His grace, He was hospitable to us and gave us His Son that we would have this opportunity of everlasting life. It's the same reason that He rescued unworthy strangers in Egypt for His own glory. It seems clear that true hospitality has the ability to honor God and His grace, especially when it becomes a conduit for liberating or freeing the message of the Lord. Our hospitality needs to be strategic, and what I mean by that is that it asks, how can I draw people to the Lord? How can I show the Lord to other people and His blessings? Who might need reinforcements just now and then in a battle against loneliness? Who are people who need to get to know each other better? And how can I use my home or my possessions or the blessings that the Lord has given me to accomplish that? As I mentioned earlier in conclusion, true hospitality is risky business, but the stakes are high if you fail as well. We'll close with Matthew chapter 25. I'll read a few verses here. Matthew chapter 25, starting in verse 41. Then He will also say to those on the left hand, depart from me, you accursed, into everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you did not take me in. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison, and you did not visit me. Then they will also answer Him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger and naked or sick or in prison and did not minister to you? Then He will answer them, saying, assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did not do it to the least of these, you did not do it to me. And these will go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteousness into eternal life. You know, a lot of this had a lot to do with this hospitality, with something that all of us are to do as Christians.
In the last lesson that we had, I made the statement that I thought that sometimes elders are held more accountable to the same standards, that they have to take it up a notch and really set the pace and set the tone of hospitality, of love, and all of these other characteristics that we've been studying. If as a sheep in the fold, I want to know what does hospitality look like, I should be able to look at an elder and say, this is what it looks like. This is what I need to be doing. If as a sheep in the flock, I wonder, how should I be a lover of what's good? How should I be just a lover in general? I should be able to look at one of the elders or one of the deacons, any of the leadership in the church, and say, oh, well, that's what it looks like. They embody that, Christ dwelling in them. Any other comments for tonight before we extend the gospel invitation?